Hey gang, this is Andy over at Falco Canines Dog Talk. We're here at the Chase Hotel in Brea, California, where we're holding a hosting a bed bug detection dog conference. And a very interesting occurrence of this conference is that I'm meeting a man that I'm actually meeting it face-to-face for the first time. His name is Pepe, and he's going to tell you his last name. And that's not because I don't know it, it's just I can't say it. And what makes this interesting is that he's from Florida, I'm over from California, and I'm sure he'll tell you the same thing, is that we've heard a lot about each other, but never really had a chance to meet. Some of the stuff we've heard about each other, maybe not so good, but we came together anyway and found out that we have a whole heck of a lot in common. So Pepe, what is your last name?
The last name is Perriero.
Perriero. Yes. So it's kind of like Perrier,
with an O. Perrier, but with an O.
Now I can say that. I should have known that. So, Pepe, why don't you tell me a little bit about your background, how you got started in the dog business. You've been around for quite a while.
Yeah, and our backgrounds are very similar. I was a canine handler my last 5 years as a police officer. And during that time frame, I noticed that there was a lot of questions often asked by people. You know, you're a police officer, so you must be an expert on dog training. And they would ask typical questions, you know, my dog, you know, pulls, or my dog does this. And I started considering the fact that, what am I going to do after law enforcement? And then one day I went to do a demonstration at a shelter, an animal control shelter.
And you're still a police officer?
Still a police officer. Went there to do a demonstration with my police canine. And I drove around the back. And when I drove around the back, there was a loading dock. And still to this day, it affects me when I think about it. But the entire loading block dock was completely covered with dead dogs that they had euthanized. And I asked a person there, I said, you know, how often does that happen? I said, every week. And I thought, how can this be? I mean, how, this many dogs dying every week. And I started really looking into dog training, dog behavior, and I realized that the number one killer of dogs under the age of one is behavior. Hmm. And you think about that, all these diseases and everything that we've got, but still behavior is the number one killer of dogs under the age of one. And that really hit me hard. That really impacted me. So it moved me into a direction where I started looking at starting my business. And I started the company in 96, which is the year that I retired my police dog. And the company originally was called J&K Canine Academy, my children's initials, Jose and Katrina. And we started it basically with a notebook and a 12 by 24 little shack and a couple of kennels. And we've grown quite a bit.
Yeah.
So we've continued to develop the company and continue to grow. This past year, we've actually separated the company. Our divisions are now three separate companies: Scentworks, Pepe Dogs, and J&K. And we continue to provide a variety of different services, everything from basic obedience, behavior modification, to Scent Division Works, which, you know, provides dogs for Scentworks.
Okay. So how many customers you get for dogs that have aggression issues?
It's a big demand. When we developed the company, one of my specialties was behavior modification for aggression. Now, unfortunately, this came from my own dog, my own police dog that when I first got had been severely abused and had been trained very, very harshly, what we call old style training. Mm-hmm. And he put me in the hospital twice. He was a very aggressive dog. And I had to make a choice. Do I keep this dog, and do I continue working with him in the old fashion of training, or do I make a decision and figure out how I can communicate with this dog and make the relationship better? And when I realized that it was a relationship, it wasn't about getting this dog and dominating this dog and controlling it, it was about a relationship. That was the turning point for me. And that was the point when I realized that I can get this dog to do the things that I need him to do for me. And I can get him to understand and appreciate the things that I can do for him. And it's a long-term process, mm-hmm. and it's very time-consuming. And I think that's why a lot of people, you'll agree with this, a lot of people don't go that route because they're trying to produce a product very quickly. But behavior modification in aggression is one of my fortes, and it's one of the things that I specialize in. And I've been very blessed. I work a lot with the University of Florida Vet School and a lot of veterinarians in that area. So we are able to provide consult for drug therapy in conjunction, because some dogs have a little bit that they just can't get over.
Yep.
And sometimes some medications will help them get over a serotonin imbalance or something like that. And the vets are very good to work with us on those and allow us to incorporate that into our training program.
Great. You know, what I've noticed is there's not a lot of trainers that will take on an aggressive dog. And that's why I ask you that question, because one of the things we're known for is that we don't turn down any dog. We do our best. And have been very successful in that aspect, and that's why I wanted to make sure that people are watching this that are on the East Coast, you know, that you there is a place to go for aggression. We get all kinds of dogs that have been kicked out at every other dog training, especially
we're
parks
there.
And some of the bigger pet companies, that kind of stuff. So it's great to know that there is a place to go for these aggressive dogs. Now, I want you to know, just as we don't train just aggressive dogs, what I like to say is we make bad dogs good and good dogs better.
Yep.
And so even if you have a good dog that you want to just work on some stuff, both of us still do that. Now, back to the relationship thing, which really perked my ears, because that's one of the things that's really important about our training, is that I teach that it's a love and respect relationship. And the reason I say that is because every relationship needs love and respect, whether it's an employee, boss, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife. You'll see a book, famous book, that's called Love and Respect, that really goes hand in hand with dog training. Dog training, you have to have it going both directions. Now, I'm going to say something that you don't have to agree with me, but what I have, what I tell people is that you have a love and respect relationship, but the dog love and respect relationship is like ours with, if you're a Christian, Jesus Christ.
Yes.
That we love him and respect him, but we will never be above him.
Correct.
It will never be stronger than him.
Correct.
So I always say that the dog has to truly believe that we're his spiritual leader.
Absolutely.
Is that similar to what you might?
It is, and the interest part of that is that a lot of dog trainers, a lot of what people read or see is the fact that I have to physically control this dog and physically dominate this dog, and in reality, just like our relationship with Jesus Christ, I think part of the issue is the belief, and you mentioned that, the actual belief that you are able to provide for me what I need and give me the things that I need, and all I simply have to do is just give in to you and allow you to provide this life for me. And I think that's part of the relationship when we talk about our dogs. Fact that a lot of it is not so much physical control, the old school of dominating, rolling over, biting, growling, all these different things. It's actually counterproductive in many ways, when in reality it's just the environment, changing the environment so it becomes very conducive for learning and very productive for that dog. So it's not just that the dog feels, okay, I've got food, I've got the things that I need, water and basic shelter, but I also have affection, I also have a job, I also have mental stimulation, which is very important. And then, of course, what every dog seeks, which is that praise and affection and love for their owner.
Right. So if you were to place your finger on a couple issues that are fairly common when somebody comes to you with their pet dog, and it could be just obedience, they could be aggression, whatever it is. What are some of the things that you notice that's most important to tell people about having a pet? What's the most important thing they should need?
I think the most important thing for people to understand when you acquire a dog is that the history of that dog is very important. Now, I'm a big proponent of rescue dogs. I think that one of the things that's very critical is that oftentimes when we get a rescue dog, we don't really have a lot of history on them. So providing a stable environment for that dog for at least the first 2 to 3 weeks allows that dog to make a transition from its foster or its kennel or its wherever it was at before into your home very easily. The first couple of weeks, you're going to see a beautiful model dog. And then after a couple of weeks, you're going to start to see that dog get comfortable. And what we talk about when we talk about stabilizing an environment is really, really basic. And when we talk about programs, whether it's jumping, barking, lunging, pulling on the leash, etc., we have a two-phase philosophy. One of those is the direct way, sit, stays, downs, heels, and things like that. But we also have an indirect way of training, which is creating an environment that becomes very conducive for that dog. So we control four specific resources: food, migration, socialization, and bedding. Food is critical for dogs. So putting them on a schedule that works well is makes them feel much better, stabilizes their metabolism in puppies, makes it easier to housebreak. Social interaction is very critical. We tend to humanize dogs. So we tend to have all these, well, if I was a dog, I would do these things and I would like this. The reality of dogs' social interaction, social behavior, is that it is aggressive in nature. It is dominant. This is where the confusion comes in. Humans feel that they have to be dominant with a dog in order to control it. The reality of it is that oftentimes the aggression is indifferent. So rather than saying to your dog, you know, no, quit that or whatever, I can just simply ignore it or just, you know, put myself in a different position or create an aversion sound that makes that dog stop its behavior. That's social interaction, how I control.
Because sometimes your reaction is exactly what's creating
what the dog wants. Exactly. Right. We saw that today in some of the training that we were doing. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But it's the behavior that the human does that creates the response from the dog. And the dog likes it. And they like that. They like seeing you get upset. They love watching that vein on your forehead swell up, you know, as you're starting to scream and point at them. And they're thinking, I know a cookie's going to come out of that finger somewhere.
You go into the dog dance.
Right. Yeah, the dog
Stop
dance.
It.
So the idea is to basically, you know, stabilize that environment to where that dog understands that food, migration, socialization, and bedding is really controlled by you. And the more that they follow that, the easier it is for them to get what they want. Because we do this every day, it's a lot different than training. Training is something you have to mentally prepare for. Oh my gosh, let me see, I've got my groceries, I've got the other things, but let me find 10 minutes to train. If we apply this to our everyday lives, much like a Christian life, then it becomes simpler. It becomes the norm. It becomes what we do every day. And dogs like rituals. They like habits. They like, you know, structure.
And structure. Yeah. You know, it's funny that you bring up that period of time when you get a rescue dog and you have that week, 2 week period. I call it the honeymoon period. and I brought this up in another video. That when you're first dating your spouse, how wonderful things are.
Yeah.
You know, you got the hearts, you got the flowers, you actually hear harps.
Yeah.
You know, when you call and you're saying, no, you hang up. No, yeah. You hang up. No, you, and then you end up falling asleep on the phone together, yeah. That kind of thing. And then after the honeymoon, you know, you're saying different things.
Yeah. Did you hang up on me?
You hung up. And it's just completely different. And then you got to take yourself back, like, why did I even marry this person? And you got to really go back and go, oh yeah, I remember, you know, the way they used to talk to me and the way they opened the door for me or treat me and that kind of stuff. And you can't lose that in after the honeymoon period. You start to see these things, the barking, the eating stuff and jumping on your neighbors and your kids and knocking them down, make them cry, that kind of stuff. And you have to go back and remember why it is you got the dog. I want a companion. I want a dog that I could take out for walks. And what ends up happening is the dog ends up in the backyard or in a kennel. And never comes out other than maybe, you know, once a month or something like that, that kind of thing. So you got to take yourself back to, you know, why did I get a dog?
It's funny you say that. I had a client that really, really hit this home for me. She continued to compare this dog that she had, she was struggling with a dog that she apparently had, you know, earlier on in her life. She would always say, you know, this dog's just never going to be like Max. I mean, Max is just the greatest dog in the world. And Max was this and Max was that. So finally one day I said, let me ask, how long ago did you have Max? She says, well, let me see, I was about 10. I said, you're 45 years old now. I said, you didn't have Max. Your parents had Max. I said, you lived with Max. So in her mind, what a perfect dog was a dog that she had when she was 10 years old. And she was comparing this dog to that. We change in our lives every day. So what we had as a young couple, you know, a puppy that we raised together. We were excited. We were in that honeymoon period, and we raised the puppy, and he was great for us, and we did all these things together. Now we're older, and we get this puppy. It's excitable and everything else, and it's just a puppy, and we can't deal with it. We're impatient because we're a different time in our lives. And I think as a trainer, it's very important to understand not just the dynamics of the dog, but the dynamics of the human being. I think you and I bring something to the dog industry that's rare, because we've just through the virtue of what we've done in our lives and in our background in law enforcement, we've seen and interacted with so many people that we understand what it takes to get people to understand and to communicate together and to slow down and relax. And I think that helps us in our canine profession.
Yeah. Let's really go back, just go really quick, go back to when we're selecting the dog, prior to getting the dog. And I want those of you that are watching this that don't have a dog yet and think about going and getting a dog, that you really have to look at your situation. How much do you work? How often are you going to be able to take the dog out to do stuff with them? What it is I'm looking for in a dog. You know, do I want a dog that just lays on my lap, or do I want a dog to get exercise with? And am I going to have time to do that exercise?
Right, correct.
You know, you got to make sure. Some people get a dog just kind of like they start a gym membership, right, and they'll do it for a couple days, and then they're paying, you know, yep, $18 a month for 10 years and never go to the gym. So really, really bear down and look at, you know, what it is that you're looking for, what it is you have time for, what it is you're going to do before you even decide on, you know, what type of breed you're going to get. And then based on that information, what type of dog. Because the worst thing you can do is if you work a 12-hour day and you have only Sundays off and get a Belgian Malinois.
Correct.
That would not be good for anybody.
Yeah, and we see that a lot. Every time a new TV show comes on, a new movie comes out with a particular breed of dog, then all of a sudden everybody wants to get one of those dogs because they want it to be just like that dog. And I think that's the difficulty. I think the other thing, too, when you're ready to select a dog is, if you're going to go to a breeder, find a reputable breeder. If you're going to go to a shelter, find a rescue organization that that provides a good background as far as the foster, where that dog has stayed, where you can actually talk to the foster of that dog and say, you know, what was it like having him at home? Was he good with other dogs? Was he good with cats? And then that way you have a better picture of it. Also, the advantage of a rescue organization is if you take the dog home and you have him for a couple of weeks and it doesn't work out, you can bring him back to those rescue organizations, which is a better option. Not every dog fits every home. You know that? Not every home fits every dog. And I think it's important when you're selecting a dog to make sure that, like Andy was saying, that your life is going to be able to fit that dog into it from time or anything else that we do.
All right. So here's the big question. I want to know what your gem is, the one secret that you hold on to as being one of the top dog trainers, in America. And that one thing that you have been holding on to, that this is my secret, this is what makes me better than anybody else, that you, if you told me that you'd have to kill me. I'm stealing this line from a friend of mine named Ed Rush, who's really good at this, but that one thing that you would, you know, you would, you haven't shared with anybody, but we're not going to tell anybody.
Of course.
What is that one thing that you do?
I think, first of all, the reality is that what I have, in part, is a lot of information that I've learned. But what I have is a gift. This is not from me, okay? This is a gift that I've been given. And I think, for me, it's the recognition that I've been given this gift and the ability to sit back and accept that gift and then share that gift with other folks. Mm. Now, I haven't told you the secret yet. I've sort of danced around it, but I'll tell you what it is. It's the ability to watch a dog when it's moving. And somehow, I don't know how, but somehow understand what's going on in that dog's life through the movement of the dog, through its actions, through its interactions with its owner. It's strange to explain to people, because some people go, oh, he's just trying to, you know, give you some hocus pocus thing or whatever. But when I say it's a gift, it's exactly why I say it's a gift, because I don't understand it sometimes, but the answer is there.
Yeah.
And that is a difficult thing to, you know, to put. I deal a lot with scientists. So when I talk to scientists about things, they're like, well, how do you explain that? Well, I can't, you know, I just have to believe and have faith that this is going to work. And I've always done that. I live my life and I work my programs and take dogs on with that blind faith that I'm going to find the answer to this somehow. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but it's going to come to me. And it's been a proven success for me. So patience and observation and accepting the fact that, you know, people that are good at this are usually been given a gift, whether they understand that or not sometimes.
Yeah. So interesting to hear you talk. I mean, this whole conversation we've had and how many similarities that we have in a lot of things in our life, you know, and we're so far apart. I've had that feeling with a couple other people, but the power of observation is one thing that I try to teach the trainers that I'm, hopefully they're going to either work for us and try to pass on, is that observation of what the dog is telling you with and without the handler. And so I do both when I'm doing an eval to find out what direction we're going to go with the dog for whatever it is that we're going to do. Is that I tell them, they walk in the room, they're sitting down, and there's moments of silence. And I know the people are looking at me like, what are you doing?
Am I paying you for this? Am I paying you money?
And I'm just
to
watching,
because
I see
when
they go to pet the dog will have a reaction, either of love or of like a wife who's with their husband who scorned her.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, don't you dare touch me. I know you're only touching me because we're in front of this person.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to show off to for your friends. Or the dog hugs up and you see that and you go, there's the problem,
right,
before you even done anything. And then I take the dog away from him. So let me go, I'm going to take your dog from you. Don't worry, I'm not going to hurt him. I'm not going to do anything with him. I'm going to take him around the building. And I take him away and I put a whole building between us and see how that dog changes. Suddenly the dog's tail begins to wag. Like, I'm with somebody who actually cares about me.
Exactly.
And wags their tail. So it's so interesting to hear you say that observation. And I don't even know where I got that. I don't know that necessarily anybody ever told me that. But it's just what I've learned is that's where I'm going to learn the most. As we know, many people want to tell us really strangely what they hate about the dog or what they love about the dog.
Correct.
And it's either one or the other. Like the husband who's there because the wife loves the dog, but he doesn't, he only wants to tell us what he hates about the dog. The wife will only tell us what she loves about the dog. So sometimes those words aren't very useful to us. It's useful in a little bit, you know, it's information. But that power observation is really, that's really good. I like it. Because I'm not sure that I would have brought that. I'm thinking of something else for myself, but I'm not going to tell you because then I'd have to kill you. But Pepe, I want to tell you what a pleasure it is to finally meet you face to face and spend some time together. I found a couple people coming up to us and saying, you know, how long have you guys known each other?
Yeah.
We don't. I think I saw you speaking at an event. I was in Philadelphia and probably on some video here and there, as we all go on the internet and watch other people's videos and stuff like that. But there's nothing like actually meeting face to face, having a beer or two together and some pizza and really talk about
But no dessert.
Stuff. No dessert.
Yes, good.
Yeah, I'm really good about that no dessert thing. All right, so it's been great.
Thank you. Really appreciate it very much.
All right, guys, this has been another episode of Falco Canines Dog Talk, and just stay tuned for another one. I don't know if we can top this one. All right, we'll